before the bloodbath begins, slither your way over to the host's socials. For the podcast, slash over to Twitter at the BHO underscore podcast. Instagram, the Baron's Hideout podcast. Then stab over to Dean's Instagram at Dean of the Dead Hot Sauce. Listen to the show on your favorite apps and Patreon. Enjoy the slay and try to stay alive. For the next period of time, strap in as the hosts rip and tear at the unsuspecting guests, in which they learn their dark secrets and methods of the genre. In this bloodbath, no one gets out alive. This is Within the Barons.
From Flicks and Friends podcast, and joining us for the third time, David Howard Thornton, and we're here to talk about something completely different, not Terrifier. We're here to talk about the Mean One. I am so excited for this, man. David, you're always a blast to talk to because you're such a character when you're not in character, and you're such like a ball of energy. So it's always fun to talk to you. But how are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I've been having a very busy year, as I was telling you guys earlier, with the conventions and stuff like that. And I've been enjoying a little bit of time off just to recharge my batteries, because I'm about to go full tilt into another convention season. Then probably after that, go into start filming Terrifier 3, if we can get the strike over and done with.
Yeah. No, that's the big thing right now, is just waiting and waiting and waiting. I'm hoping that everything, you know, comes out the way that everybody wants it to at the end, or at least as close as you can, just to resolve this, because...
It's ridiculous. It's been ridiculous. The good thing is, though, we've, for basically all the projects I've been working on, they're all independent films, so we've applied for all the interim agreements and everything, so, like, we've done our part. We're just waiting for SAG to do their part and finish up the agreement, because they're so backlogged right now.
Yeah.
Which is... But it's good to see that, because you see that there are so many other film companies out there willing to work with the agreements. It's just that core group of big studios that are being the jerks right now. And so even I've discovered lately there's like infighting inside the AMPTP right now, because there are groups like Warner Brothers that want to abide by these agreements, but they're part of that whole conglomerate, so they all have to be in together, and it's driving them all insane. But I that makes me think we're close to the tipping point now, where, you know, when like Warner Brothers just declared they lost over $400 million, that's, you know, they're starting to go crazy. They're wanting to break away. So I see the cracks forming right now, and it's and I knew this was going to happen. It's not going to be the picket lines that's going to be doing anything. That's just more of a formality than anything. It's when these studios are losing income.
Yeah.
And I think it's a beautiful thing, because I'm like, oh no, Warner Brothers lost $400 million. Like, you know, they would have only lost $45 million if they had just initially gone with the agreement. So it's just like, hey.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, we can hold out, they can't.
Yeah, and like you were saying before, you're in the convention circuit, and like a lot of other actors are in there, so it's like you're still, you know, able to bring some, you know, money in and whatnot, and support yourself, and, you know, keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
And like you said, with the indie films and stuff, like you got those going on, you're just waiting on the other end of things. But it's like things are happening; they're just not to the full extent yet. But I'm excited.
Exactly.
Super excited to see what's going to be coming out in the next year after all this, especially after all the delays.
I think we're going to be seeing a little bit of a renaissance happening in the indie world because of it, because that's what's been going on. It's like, it's all these independent film companies have been able to film, during this whole entire strike, it's the studios that haven't. So there's going to be a gap there of films coming out that are not studio, big studio films. They're going to be all the independent films. That's going to give all these independent film companies a chance to finally shine and show, like, yeah, we can actually do a lot of good stuff. I mean, I think some of the films I've done have proven that, where it's because we've had the freedom, because there's more of a freedom that comes along with being an independent film. You don't have a studio system over you saying you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. It, we can just do it with, I mean, that's what we did with Terrifier 2. And I think that's why we're a huge success. It's we didn't have a studio over us saying, no, you can't do these over the top grotesque kill scenes.
Yeah. And you were in theaters, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
That was the biggest thing.
And that's the thing, that these theaters, like the AMC, Cinemarks, Regals, and stuff like that, they're going to be looking for revenue.
Exactly.
And they're going to be reaching out to all the independent film companies that have been making these movies, because there's not going to be studio films coming out. So they got to find them from somewhere to keep money coming in. So they're going to go reach out to the independent film companies. So it's going to be great for independent films. And I love to see that. I think this is something that's been needing to happen for a long time, because I feel like the studio system's been what's been ruining the film industry recently, because it's just gotten so stale.
Yeah.
It's because they play it too safe. They're all about, they're so, they put, you know, hundreds of million dollars into a movie, so they don't want to take risks.
Yeah.
And they don't want to lose that money. So that's why I love independent films. It's like, yeah, we don't have big budgets, so we're not worrying about taking those kind of risks, you know, with the money, because we don't have that kind of money in the first place. So like, let's just do what we want to do and we'll see if it works.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, going back to Terrifier being in theaters, it's what really launched this movie to be in theaters same year, you know?
Yeah,
like that happened, and super low budget indie horror coming out and paving the way for everything that's happened this year. So really, because of you and all the rest of the crew, you've really crafted a new way to support indie horror.
I think so. It wasn't just the mean one that was able to get released in theaters. You know, you had Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, and stuff like that. There's like, it's helped a lot of independent films get out there, and I think that's a really cool thing. It's like, you know, that's kind of like a little badge of pride. I think all of us wear right now. So we kind of opened the door for a lot of independent films, and I think it's about time, because there's a lot of good stuff out there that, you know, that's in the independent world that people don't get to see.
Yeah, I agree. Before I launch into any of my other questions, Dustin, I want to give you some time to talk and ask away. What do you have over there that you want to throw over to David?
Yeah, so I was just, me and Dustin were talking before we jumped on. Like, I actually seen this in its theatrical run back in December. So I was pretty stoked when he asked me to jump on this with you guys. Oh, dude, it's such a blast, man. But I wanted to know if there was any other, like, public domain fictional character you would like to adapt to film. Who would that be?
Oh, my gosh. God, public domain. I don't know. Out there in the public domain and stuff like that. But that's a tough one. But, I mean, there is one. I don't know if he's a public domain or not, but I feel that, you know, such films like Deadpool and, you know, even Terrifier have kind of helped pave the way for it, where you can have the violent comedies out there.
Sure.
It's would be The Mask. I would love to do a new adaptation of The Mask and do it like the original Dark Horse Comics version, where it was that dark and gritty, bloody, violent version. And I think it would actually lend itself to a good series.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you had different people that took on the mask in the comic series. You know, first of all, Stanley Ipkiss and his girlfriend gets a hold of it, and then you get Calloway that eventually takes on the mask, and Calloway actually becomes more the heroic character with the mask as opposed to Stanley and his girlfriend. And there's so much stuff you get, that each season could be a different owner of the mask or something like that, or who knows. But it's like, I just think that's a character that I think needs a little bit of a reboot.
Yeah, that's, man, that was solid, dude. And then I just wanted to know, man, what got you into, you know, making horror? Like, what inspired you to do horror films? I'm sure you're asked that a lot, but I mean,
Yeah, it was, it's definitely something I never, like, all my years of acting, especially when all my goals when I first moved to New York, being in horror movies was not one of my goals. I never imagined I would be doing horror movies because I was like, I'm a skinny little nerdy guy. I'm a comedy guy, and I was like, yeah, if I ever did a horror movie, I would be like the Randy type character. That would be like the smart ass character gets killed off eventually. I never imagined I'd be villains in horror movies and those killers, stuff like that. So that's just something I kind of fell in, because like when I first moved to New York, I was trying to be in like Broadway, and I was a musical theater guy. I was a voiceover guy. I did voices for little kids shows and stuff like that, but I just fell into it with Terrifier. I was like, that audition came up for Terrifier. They were looking for a tall, skinny guy that had experience doing physical comedy or clowning. And I had never really done film work before outside of extra work. And I was like, you know, this would be a good way to just get my feet wet in this industry, and not just horror industry, but just the film world in general. I could learn a lot on set. I'm like, because back then, no one really knew about Terrifier. You know, you had the fans from All Hallows Eve, but they were kind of few and far between. Because, you know, at that time, that was All Hallows Eve was an underground indie type movie that a lot of people just didn't know. I was like, oh, who knows if anybody's going to see this thing? But yeah, this would be a great experience and stuff like that. And I never imagined that this was where my career was really going to take off. So it's just like, ah, this is fun.
Hell yeah.
Nice. And it's funny you brought up All Hallows Eve, man, because that's one that me and my buddy at work, we talk about, because he would tell me when he would watch it with his girlfriend, the part that got them is like when the credits were done and the screen came back on and you were there tapping on the glass.
Yeah.
He's like, that shit got my girlfriend so bad that she books it to the room every time they watch it.
I think that I wish I could say that was me, though. That was Mike Gianelli, who is original artist.
Oh,
yep.
Yeah.
That's another thing. So, I got to
give him
all
the credit. Yeah. It's like Mike's the OG art. We actually finally met earlier this year. We did a convention together. Yeah. So that was fun. We did a photo op together. He didn't do on the makeup or anything like that, but it was nice to finally meet the OG art, because he was one of Damien's best friends growing up. He was always the guy that Damien would just like, anytime he was trying out new makeup or something like that, he would call Mike over and say, hey, Mike, come over here. Let's put a bullet hole in your head or something like that. And you're like, he's like, okay. So yeah, it was fun finally. Yeah. It was great finally meeting him. And it's like, we're trying to get him out to do some more conventions and everything like that. Cause he's basically a stay-at-home dad now. And so it's like, hey, let's get you some extra income coming in. You deserve it, man. It's like, let's get out there on the road when you can, you know. Because I think they just welcomed about to welcome in a new girl. I'm very excited for him.
That's awesome. Yeah.
But yeah, that little bit there with the tapping on the guy, I thought that was brilliant. Because I saw All Hallows Eve before I even knew about Terrifier auditions. And I was already a fan of the character. I was like, because even back then, I was like, this is a character there's a lot of potential with. I was like, there's so much. He's got such a great look, and he's got. I thought then is like, yeah, he's like this evil Mr. Bean type character. It's like, yeah, you could do a lot of fun stuff with this. If I could only get a chance to play him, man, I could do a lot of great things. And I never imagined here I would
here
be.
We are.
There it is. Yeah. That's nice.
And now you're moving on to other characters. The mean one.
And
I had a great pleasure of talking to Steven. After this was out, I don't even remember how it happened. I don't know if I reached out or whatever it was. It happened, and we talked, and it was a great interview. And, you know, learning how he also has ties with the Terrifier crew and whatnot. And I guess he grew up with everybody. So it made a lot of sense seeing you part of this. But I wanted to ask from your perspective of how did it kind of come about? How were you introduced to being in this?
That's the fun. It's because of those connections with the Terrifier crew. He went to school with our Fuzz and the Lens guys, and like, you know, Mike Levy and Jason Levy and Steve Del Sala. And it was like he was telling them, because he had cut a trailer, just a fun little fake movie trailer together for The Mean One, and like a year or so before, and it got a lot of love from people. They're like, oh, you should make this into a real movie. So he's like, oh wow, why don't I just for shits and giggles make this into an actual movie then? And so he needed a Mean One character for it, and so he was talking to our fuzz guys, and they're like, Dave would be perfect for this.
Yeah.
And it, the funny thing was, though, like, they didn't, none of them really realized my actual background with that character, because, you know, of course it's a parody of, you know, because, you know, this, that's why we always have to explain to people, this is not the Grinch, this is the Mean One, this is a parody of that classic, you know, Christmas story. Well, I had toured with the national tour of How the Grinch Stole Christmas for 5 years, where I understudied the Grinch.
That's so awesome.
Our Grinch was the wonderfully talented Stephen Carl, who was Robbie Rotten from Lazytown. And so I learned so much. I consider him like my Socrates of comedy.
Oh,
because okay. I learned so much from him, and that I put into both art and The Mean One. It's just like, so it's like when they said, hey, our friend is making this movie based off of this property as a parody, is like, what do you think? I'm like, oh my God, let me see this trailer. And I was like, oh my God, I got to do this. This is like full circle for me. I got to do this. This is, because even back when I was touring with Grinch, I was like, man, I was thinking this would make such a dark horror movie one day. It's like, how has this never been made into a horror movie? Because I had my own dark theory in the show, and I reveal it to the cast one time. They're like, oh, that is so messed up. it's with the Who Beast that the Grinch cuts at the end of, you know, the story and serves as like the all beast on the Who Beast. And we're all like, what is the Who Beast? And I'm like, that's what the Grinches are. It is like he's serving up his own kind.
Whoa! Wow. That's
why
up.
He hated Christmas so much, is because they would slaughter his people. And he was the last of them or something like that. It's just like, and like, of course that's not the real case, but that was my dark theory of why the Grinch really hated Christmas. It's like he had seen his whole entire like race wiped out by the Who's. So they had something to eat for Christmas.
Oh my God. I love that theory.
They go Grinch hunting. Yeah.
Yeah. We need that. We need a Grinch hunting movie. Yeah. With you hunting down.
I just see the Mean One like tying the red bandana, the bandana around his head like fucking Rambo.
Yeah. But that's what makes it even more fucked up with him at the very end of it, like carving up, he's the one that's carving up the Who Beast and serving it to people. It's like, oh no, you're serving your own kind. It's Soylent Green for you in so many ways.
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy.
No. Oh yeah. Yeah. That got a lot of like some people in the cast weren't too happy about that. They're like, that's Dave, man. That's just, no, don't. No.
It makes it interesting though. And
that's what awesome. I should have known. I should be doing horror movies back then.
Yeah. And I mean, I do have to say, I love this poster so much. Like Steven sent me a copy and he signed
it.
Oh
yeah.
And like it's so good. And I wanted
the makeup in it is just,
I wanted to touch on that of like the costume design and the makeup. But what was the process of being in that, like compared to getting ready for art essentially?
Oh yeah. Oh, we had such Tatiana was our makeup artist on that, and she's got her own like, you know, system out there in LA that, you know, she's just so freaking talented. Like, it was so cool because like the prosthetics we used were these like Halloween. I think it was like a Halloween like prosthetics for a dog.
Oh, interesting.
Okay, yeah. All right.
And so she just glued that to my face and spray painted everything. So all that is like, you know, airbrushed. That she did. So she's got amazing airbrush skills. But what really sucked about those prosthetics, because, you know, some people are like, oh, those are just prosthetics used for Grinch. And I'm like, no, these are actually, like, we had the packaging, it showed as a dog. It's like, and she just utilized it in this really fun, creative way. But what really sucked is, like, whoever they made those prosthetics off of was someone with a tiny little nose and they didn't put air holes in for the nostrils. Mm. And so, like, we tried our best to just kind of try to cut some air holes in there for me, but it just didn't work. So I'm for like 12 hours just underneath that prosthetic, and I cannot breathe. So I was a mouth breather the whole entire time. But it was funny because, like, when I would talk, I would basically sound like the Jim Carrey Grinch unintentionally, because I was like, "Mom, well, that's just how we're gonna talk." Because I was just having to talk through my nose the whole time, so I just kind of talked like that the whole time anyway. It's like, oh my gosh, I bet that's where Jim Carrey got the voice from, anyways, because he probably couldn't breathe through his prosthetic suit. Because like Clint Howard, who was in the old Ron Howard, of course, version of it.
Yeah,
he was telling me how horrible the Who noses were. To where, and like, it's like, yeah, you couldn't breathe in those things. Like, I feel your pain, man. I know how you feel.
Yeah, the suit was awesome too.
And
just the whole getup on it is amazing.
It was so filthy. I loved how filthy and ragged that costume looked. It was a great costume. It was so well made, because, you know, I knew it was, you know, a low budget film. Like, I don't know how good these prosthetics and how good the costume is going to be for this thing. You know, I go in there, I was stunned. And I was originally supposed to have like prosthetic teeth. I was going to have like pointed teeth and everything like that. But the ones that they sent us, you know, so those times where you have to get like the mold that you put into it and supposed to adhere. Well, they didn't have a backing on it. It was only for the front, and the mold itself was supposed to, it as soon as I put them in, they just broke apart. And I'm like, okay, well, crap. And so Tatiana just had a backup plan, and she just painted my teeth with all this nastiness on it, which I think I kind of preferred anyway.
It looks great.
It was great. She was very, very talented team that they had on there, and I had fun. And it wasn't just me. She had makeup. She also had to make up my stunt double as well. Robin, he was such a great, he made me look like a badass. Like, when he was doing a lot of the fighting and stuff like that, with the fight between Cindy and him. And our Cindy herself is a stunt actress, so she did all of her own stunts. I can't say I did all my own stunts. So it's like, Robin made me look good. I was just there for the reaction shots. He's the one whipping the cane around, all this kung fu stuff. I'm like, god dang, man.
Yeah, everything in this film, for it being so low budget, I think is so beautifully shot. Like, how Steve and like the crew like managed to make this look so beautiful. The voiceover on this film is
amazing. The voiceover, he's so great. I love it. It has that nice like sardonic wit to it all. I love it.
Yeah.
I always like to compare this movie to like those Hallmark movies. I see this is like the Hallmark Channel made a horror movie. This would be it.
Yeah, exactly.
It has that feel to it. I love it.
Another thing too. Do you have any of the suit from this film? Do you own any of it?
I have the boots still. They gifted me the boots. So those have actually been handy here living in New York City in the winter.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I think what you should do is do photo ops as the main one. That would be sick.
That would be hard, though, because that makeup takes so many hours to put on and everything like that. So it's like, it would be pretty sick, though. But boy, that would be tough to do.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's like, if you could like do a quick change, like art 1 second, and then come out as the main one. If only, you know.
If only, or do half my face is art, half mean.
I was to say, yeah, you stand like this, yeah.
Like, oh, okay, that would be cool, like
Two-Face. There you go, your own Two-Face.
What are we celebrating right now, Halloween or Christmas?
Both, because this is...
like, oh, God, I just come as Jack Skellington.
The physical and the VOD and everything's coming up October 3rd, so very soon. I'm really excited for that. Everybody's been so amazing that I've talked to with us, especially Steven. He's such a brilliant individual, and One thing that I do want to say, I don't know if you're aware of this, mm-hmm. but I've been doing a lot of live events in Salem with movies and stuff.
Oh, nice.
And Steven and Amy are actually going to be coming here November 30th to show The Mean One.
Oh, that's awesome. That's my birthday, too.
You should come.
Who knows? I might be able to, actually.
That would be awesome, having you there in attendance.
I wonder if we can make that happen.
Yeah, because I was talking to him, and I guess he's going to be filming another film around this area, and we just made it work out that way. I'm like, I want to show this, so we're going to be showing the director's cut, and he wants to do the 45-minute making of this, so I think that would be really cool.
Oh, that's cool. Hell yeah, cool. Man. Wow, so that would be fun to go back to Salem. I haven't been there since 2021, so it'd be nice to go back.
Yeah, man, I'm loving these live events that I'm doing. It's just a big extension of the show that I'm doing here. So I'm so thankful for him allowing me to do that and to show this film, you know, in the theater to way more people with the release already out and whatnot. It's amazing, and I'm so happy for everybody, especially you, David, getting all this work and, you know,
thank you.
All the convention life that you're doing. It's great to see people thriving. It really is.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. I just consider myself lucky. It's just I keep saying I was just at the right place at the right time. It's just it's like I always like to tell my little story about how Terrifier came to be. It was just like I had come back from my last tour of Grinch, and I decided to take 4 months off of my life just to focus on auditioning. I was going to live off unemployment from my tour and just focus on auditioning. But I was at that time focusing on trying to get on another Broadway tour or getting on Broadway. And I had been in final callbacks for like 5 tours and shows and stuff like that. And final callbacks. I was in front of Susan Stroman and all these people just... And they all fell through for one reason or another. And I was getting so disgruntled because I was like, I am so close to something big. And then that little audition for Terrifier came along and I was like, yeah, why not? And it's like, if I had gotten any of those other gigs that I was in the final callbacks for, I wouldn't have been able to audition for Terrifier, or I wouldn't have been able to film Terrifier because I would have been on the road.
Yeah.
So it's like everything worked out the way it was supposed to work out. It's just like, and I look at it this way, it's like if I had missed out on doing Terrifier, I would not be where I am right now. Exactly. I would probably still be trying to, you know, wait tables and, you know, audition for Broadway or whatever else, right? Who knows where I'd be right now. So it's just like things just happened for a reason. That was just a very serendipitous moment in my life. I was just at the right place at the right time.
Yeah. And it's so awesome to see, and I love hearing the stories of everybody, like when they started out. I know first time you were on here, we went into a lot of great detail about how you started out and hearing about your background and your family and everything, and then seeing where you are right now and how, you know, proud everybody is of you and how proud everybody would have been of you and whatnot. It's amazing, and I love just seeing people just be on top of the world for everything and me being somebody who works, you know, a full-time job, who does this as a hobby and gets to speak to people like you. It's like, it's such a pinch me moment every time. This is your third time on this show. And it's like, every time I'm like, how am I talking to David Howard Thornton right now?
Dude, I have those moments still. I have the pinch me moments. Like, you know, now I'm like I said earlier, I'm friends with Clint Howard. I'm like, what? Those type of moments. I've been having a prank war with Kane Hodder, and I'm like, what? It's still very surreal to me. So like when I've had people like, oh, you know, when I have people coming up to me in conventions and they're shaking because they're so nervous to meet me, I'm like, oh, no, don't. No, I'm just me. I'm a geek that got lucky. I still have those moments where I meet other people and I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, recently I met Joey Fatone at a convention and I was so nervous to go talk to him because he was like, his booth was like It was me and like Murr from Impractical Jokers than him. And he and Murr were talking a lot. And Murr and I were talking a lot. And I'm like, I got to go just say hi to Joey Fatone. And he's like, dude, I've been so nervous to come over and talk to you all weekend because I am like, I love the Terror Fire movie so much. I'm like, but you're Joey Fatone. I'm like, but no, dude. I'm like, are you kidding me? You're Joey Fatone.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I have those pinch me moments. It's like, it's just, it's, you never know. Like, you know, I worked in the food service industry for 13 years where, you know how it goes. You get people that just treat you like dirt on a daily basis because you, and I've never understood that. It's like, everybody's trying to make it.
Exactly.
You know, it's like a job's a job. You know, this is what, this isn't my career. This is my job. This is how I'm sustaining my career.
Yeah.
At the time. It's just like, yeah. It's like, hey, what I'm trying to say is don't be rude to your waiters, people.
Yes.
Don't be rude to people that work in, you know, retail or any of that kind of stuff. They're, you know, every, don't be a dick.
Yeah, exactly. Say it louder for the people in the back.
Yeah, I'll say it louder and slower. Do not be a dick.
Yes.
I got to the point in my restaurant career where I was the guy taking those bullets for the servers, man. I did not care. I let people yell at me all the time, man, because I don't let that happen.
Oh, it's just horrible. Yeah. I got the stories I can tell about those days, especially waiting tables on the Upper East Side of Manhattan for the richest of the rich.
Oh, I can imagine.
I believe it.
Oh, my God. The best one I like to tell is like this woman I come in. And she, I'm not even on the clock yet. I'm not even in full uniform. And she grabs me by my arm and pulls me to her table. And I'm like, whoa, first of all, do not touch me. I don't know you. And she's like, look at this. Look at this. And I'm like, what's wrong? She's like, I told my waiter I wanted 6 cubes of ice in my water. And he gave me 7.
Oh, come on.
What are you going to do about
God.
It? And I'm like, yeah, just give it a few minutes. It'll become water. And I walked off. And then I come back like 15 minutes when I was finally on shift. And she's like, yeah, snapping her fingers at me. And I'm like, yes. It's like, well, look at this. And there's this giant puddle of water on her table. And I'm like, what happened? It's like, well, I didn't want that extra cube of ice. So I took it out and put it on the table. And I look what happened. I'm like, look, it became water. Congratulations.
And that's when you wish you could just turn into Art the Clown and go ham.
Oh, my God. I think that's like my origin story, really.
That's the villain origin story.
Oh, my God. Because it's like I always said, thank God for the ability to have inner monologue. Because, oh, I would have gotten in trouble so many times. So I was cussing people out in my head all the time. Because it's just like, because people would get so upset over the smallest, most insignificant things like that.
Yep.
And I'm like, man, I would hate to see how these people actually respond to a real crisis in life. Like, these are obviously people that have never had to deal with real problems.
Yeah.
When they might not even have to handle the situation. Yeah.
No. Cause our same restaurant, we had the year before Sandy, we had another hurricane here in New York that was called Hurricane Eileen that didn't do anything, but everybody freaked out and thought it was going to be like how Sandy actually was. And so, like, our restaurant was the one restaurant in that whole, like, 3 or 4 block radius that did not close down. And we were the only, because of that, all these people came in. And luckily, I didn't have to work that night, but I had other coworkers that did. And they said they did the biggest business they had ever done. Because all these and people were coming in going, oh, my God, thank God you're open. We have not eaten in 3 days. I'm like, you've never lost power. That the bodegas are open, delivery is still available. Like, how have you not eaten in 3 days? Like, do you not know how to fend for yourself?
Nope.
Do you not know how to cook your own food? You don't even have to cook your food. You can just open a bag of Pop-Tarts and eat some Pop-Tarts or make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And like, you find ways to fend. But these people live in that little bubble where people do everything for them. They don't know how to survive on their own. I'm like, my God.
Yeah.
This is it. That was like such an eye-opening moment for all of us. We're like, these people are in their own little world. They have been so pampered. They would, if the zombie apocalypse ever happened, they would be the first to go. They would just be gone.
You know what? That's fine. I'll feed them. I'll save myself. I'll be like, hey, yeah, you go over here. And that's the feeding zone.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, they have some farm raised salmon over there. Go get the farm raised salmon. That's like zombies. I don't know. These are the things that I would think on the job, and I'm like, it's a good thing I'm not saying this out loud. Yeah.
I have that on a daily basis. I'm a manager at a restaurant, so I know that.
Oh, you know, I love that. The one time I was a manager, way back in the day, and like this one person's like, and I was actually working on the floor, and she's like, can I speak to a manager? And I'm like, let me get him. And I did the whole turnaround. Yes, can I help you?
I've turned my hat around in front of someone before.
It was like, you just see that person just like,
it's okay. Well, you're giving me your money, so I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you're paying me. That's how I always think of it. But now that we're kind of talking about restaurants and whatnot, there's a big scene in the main one.
Yes.
That is in a restaurant. I know you said that you had a stunt double that did a lot of like the extra things, but during that scene, was there anything that you did and that you I don't know, was there like a favorite part of that scene that you still think about till this day?
No, that's the funny thing. That day is a day that I didn't actually have to use Robin, or he was there the whole entire time ready to go in for me. He was in full costume, but I was determined to do as much as I could that day. And because it was me and everybody else was stunt actors, and our stunt director worked on Power Rangers for like the first 10 seasons and stuff like that. Wow. It was funny because he comes up to us, he's tells us, yeah, when I used to work with the Rangers and stuff, I was like, oh, wow, he used to be like in the military and stuff like that. I'm like, no, he's talking about Power Rangers. I'm like, oh, shit, that's awesome. Oh,
rad, yeah.
That's awesome. All right, man. But yeah, he so these were all most of those stunt actors he had trained himself. Robin was one of his pupils too. And he was just throwing things at me, and I'm amazed because we did that whole entire scene in one day. That's a scene that in Terrifier would have probably taken like 3 or 4 days to film with all the stunts and all that was going on, especially if we'd done all the practical effects and stuff like that. But it's like, oh boy, they threw a lot at me that day, and I had a blast. It was the stunt actors doing the real work. I'm just there doing the funny shtick and stuff like that. But I mean, they're throwing themselves, doing flips, throwing themselves off tables and stuff like that. I'm like, this is insane. I had such a fun time that day. And Robin's like, I if you need me, I'm here. I'm like, no, you're okay.
Yeah.
Take five.
Let me have fun twirling this cane around.
But the thing too with Robin, what I liked about him, he was always there to give me pointers and stuff like that. So he wasn't just my stunt double. He was kind of like my coach in some ways too. So like we would run ideas by each other, and he would like, here, there's how you make it a little bit better and stuff like that. And so it was even though he wasn't necessarily doing all the stunts that day, he was still a big part of it because I was relying on him a lot just for pointers and all that good stuff. And he was just there cheering me on the whole entire tune too. And this, but yeah, I love that whole entire day. That was just fun. I think my favorite part though, when that was just messing around with the guy in the Christmas tree costume.
Oh yeah.
My God. When he first came trotting out that thing, I died laughing because it's just that all the movements he's doing that is so herky jerky. And that guy that was so hilarious. That was fun. That was a lot of fun.
Also, like I love that. Now that you brought that up, that's so funny because you hear like the deflating sounds and stuff in the movie. Yeah. Actually, like stabbing him, I die laughing every time.
We were laughing so hard doing that part too. It was just like we I think we had some outtakes where we couldn't get through it because we were laughing. One of us would start cracking up because that balloon, I don't know what it is about that balloon costume, but it is just so funny. Like, damn, because I did not know that that was going to happen. He just comes trotting out for the scene. I'm like, oh my God, no.
I love the little the ending of that too, when you take off the little cover with the little you know gingerbread house that's right there. I'm like, oh, he's actually gonna eat it. No, you just go crazy on it.
Oh, that was so fun. I just had a fun day. That was such a great day. And it's like I said, it was really cool for me to be working with all those great talented stunt actors too, because I love stunt actors. I have a lot of friends that are stunt actors, and I feel like they never get the respect they deserve. They don't get the recognition they deserve because they're the ones that make everybody else look like badasses.
Yeah.
In these films. It's just like, and they put their bodies through all kinds of hell. It's like, well, my buddy, Jared, he does a lot of stunts here in New York for different series. And he's usually the guy you see falling downstairs and shows and stuff like that, like the thug that goes downstairs. And I'm like, that's one of the most dangerous stunts for stunt actors to do, is to fall downstairs, because it's so many things can go wrong.
Yeah.
So many things can go wrong. You have to be in total control. Like, I remember when I was watching the latest John Wick film, the scene where he keeps getting knocked down hundreds of stairs there in Paris, which I have walked up before, and I know what those stairs are like. I'm like, shit. But because I'm like, that stunt actor that day had to do that so many times. And I'm like, man, I hope they paid him a lot of money to do that, because that was so impressive. But that's the thing. It's like these guys, I feel like they deserve their own category in the Academy Awards.
Yeah.
Because it's the work these men and women do is just astounding. Astounding. I was like, I mean, you look at the stuff that Tom Cruise does for the Mission Impossible movies, and he gets all this publicity for that, but the rest of these stunt actors that do the same things, if not more complicated stunts, more dangerous stunts, don't get the recognition. Like, come on, you know, like these people need their recognition too.
Yeah, I mean, they're the ones that really help drive a movie too.
Yeah.
Because you, as the actor, like, who's there front and center, like, you paint what it's going to be, but then they have to essentially initiate and go forward with that, unless you are doing your own stunts as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are people who do that, and I know that you also, you mentioned that you do as well when you can. I agree, they need to definitely have more recognition, and they need to have like their own award, essentially.
Yeah.
I think we should do that. Let's create the best stunt award of the year.
I agree.
Let's do that.
Because it's like that'll be one of those categories that you're watching in the Academy Awards, where they're showing all the different clips and stuff like that. This is the cool stuff to watch.
Yeah.
It's like, dang. It's like, you know, especially a lot of the fight choreography that you see in a lot of shows this day and age. I mean, I always think back to like the hallway scene in the Daredevil series, that one shot scene of him just going down that hallway for a few minutes. It's one continuous shot, and it's just like, my God. The work that those actors had to do that day to do that scene so flawlessly. I was like, that itself should have won an award.
Yeah.
That scene itself should have won an award. Because I was like, that's so impressive.
I just
so many moving parts.
Yeah, I just watched something similar to that. I just watched The Protector with Tony Jaa. Mm-hmm. Man, they do with that whole 7-minute sequence going up the ramp, man, and the amount of people making the pieces that are moving, making that scene work, is just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I love it. I love single shot stuff, man. It's so,
I do too.
So good.
It's so impressive when it's done right. Woo.
Impressive. Yeah.
it's especially impressive when it's done right, where you don't even realize it's a continuous shot.
Mm-hmm.
You're just so engrossed in it. Then later on, you're like, oh shit, that was all one continuous shot. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know Mike Flanagan does a lot of stuff like that too, and his stuff. And like, I love all of his work, and I'm really excited.
Oh my God!
I've gotten
to know him recently. He invited Damien and I out for lunch earlier this year when we were out in LA, and it was like, Mike's fantastic, and his work is amazing. Oh my! I finally, because I've watched most of the stuff, but somehow Midnight Mass missed me.
That's so
and I
good.
Finally watched it. Oh my, that's probably my favorite thing he's done so far. I was like, that was such a good story.
Yeah, the way that it evolves over time and everything, and how it gets darker and darker. It's great.
So good. It was so good. I'm so excited to see the Mask of the Red Death.
Yeah.
And the fall of House of Usher. Yeah. I mean, but there's like all of that's gonna be so much Poe involved in that. He said, "I'm like, I'm very excited." He is so good at doing like the dramatic horror movies, and Stephen King. He's really good with Stephen King.
Yeah, Doctor Sleep was amazing.
Yeah. And I'm like, because I know that he's, you know, been given the reins for the Dark Tower series. So I am hoping, you know, that's been in limbo recently from what I understand. But I'm like, when I first found out that he was going to be taking on the Dark Tower series, I'm like, oh, thank God. They've got the right guy behind it, because this he will do it right. He'll do it just because the movie they released a few years ago. Because I love that series. I love that series, that book series so much. And I was like, this is not the Dark Tower. I don't know what this is, but this is not the Dark Tower.
Yeah. Stephen King.
I want to see it done right. Oh, God.
I know. I could go Stephen on and King's on about my that favorites. Series too, because of how everything gets so connected, and you realize it's so bigger.
It's the spine of Stephen King's universe.
Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that. They say, what is this? I'm like, no, read it. You'll know.
Yeah.
You'll know.
And like, it's so creative. It's so good. Yeah. So good. Yeah. Man. I could go on and on and on and on about Dark Tower series.
Like, that's like another thing too. With the strikes and everything that's going on, it's giving us an opportunity to go back and watch things that either we missed or that we really, really loved, and then realize like, yeah, we have the strike that's going on, but it's building up to something so big. And I can feel it that something really big is going to happen. And all these things that we have loved or have found out that we've loved over the last like year or two, it's going to enhance so much and everybody's work, like with the Mean One, with the Terrifier series, with, you know, Mike Flanagan stuff. It's going to be really, really awesome as, you know, horror fans or just fans of cinema in general. Yeah.
We love storytelling. That's the thing. And it's like, you got to focus on good storytelling. And I think we're about to see a nice renaissance in that media right now, and is this, and I think that the strikes have contributed to it. I really do. It's just like, it's something that's kind of needed to happen. It's just like, I'm very interested to see where it's all going to head towards now.
Same,
especially with this whole thing with, you know, the AI, all that kind of stuff. Like, what did I say? I can totally forgetting what I saw, but they said they were writing a whole script using
Brightburn
AI.
2.
That's right.
Brightburn 2, man.
Yeah,
I'm like, fuck you.
Dude, I love the first one, and I do.
Oh, I do too.
I am not about that with this second one. Yeah. Man. I am not about that.
I think where I read the article, I just commented, I said, fuck you.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck you. No, do not. You say that. That just makes me, that makes me so mad.
You're gonna miss so much of the humanity and like emotion.
Yeah, that's the thing. Exactly. That's the thing that with my feelings towards AI is that, but the arts, AI has no place in the arts because the arts is a purely human area. That's like, you know, anything with the music or writing or dance or theater. Any of that's based on emotion and experiences. It's like, that's something AI cannot truly replicate. It can imitate it, but it can't actually create it itself.
Yeah. I think of it more as like maybe a tool if you're trying to like bounce something back and forth, but to use it as like a full on process of creating something from start to finish, I don't think so.
No,
like it has. It can be
used It can be used to enhance things, but that should not be your end all be all.
Exactly.
Don't use that to write a script.
Yeah, like
that is disgusting to me.
Like, what if we'll say like either like Steven or Damien came over to me like, hey man, I wrote a script. Well, actually, I didn't write it. I asked AI to write it. You write it to start Terrifier 3 now, and you'll be like, fuck no.
Yeah.
No, like, what are you doing?
Okay, I would know it just by reading the script. I'm like, this is not good. This is there's no heart.
Yeah,
exactly. In it, and that's the thing. It's missing heart. It's just like, yeah, because I've read some of these AI scripts, and I'm like, this is crap.
Yeah,
it's missing that element to it. It's missing that human element to it. And I was like, no. So that's why I'm so glad that they're trying to nip that in the bud now, especially with the AI being used to replicate actors and stuff like that. I love what Sean Penn recently said. It's like, it sounds a little disgusting what he said, but he hit the nail on the head about it all. He's like, when someone said, you know, that they should use AI to replicate actors' performances, it's like, oh, how would you feel if someone used your daughter's image and had your daughter's image doing these things in movies and stuff like that without her permission and all that? Exactly. And it's like, used in sexual situations or whatever like that. How would that make you feel to have your image or your own flesh and blood's image used in such a way?
I'd be pissed if I saw my son doing something that we had no way of consenting on.
It's amoral, and I think it was very interesting that they had that Black Mirror episode.
Yeah,
that came out right before all this happened. Like, boy, that was perfect timing, because it put that right in the social conscious, right there. And I was like, this is perfect timing for that. Wow.
Hell yeah, Dustin. If there's any last questions that you want to ask David before I throw my final two, go right ahead.
Nah, man, I'm along for the ride now.
Hell yeah, man. That's awesome.
I'm just sitting here just listening to it's just so amazing hearing these stories, because like Dustin was saying, it's a pinch me moment, man, because this is all I've been talking about all day at work. It's what's happening right now, man, and it's just amazing. So I'm stoked on it.
Hell yeah. And it's always fun talking to you, David. Like, I've talked to a lot of people, but every time I have you on, it's great hearing you. Like, what I think and how I feel as an interviewer or as a podcaster, I don't want to hear myself talk. You know, I'm here for you. And like, that's why I love talking to you, because the stories and just hearing everything from your perspective and everything that you're doing and whatnot, and just hearing it makes me happy. Aww. Very happy. So I want to ask this, because I think this is a pretty interesting question. Mm-hmm. And we may have talked about this before, but as everybody knows, you mostly portray monsters, or you're always in makeup, or, you know, being behind something. Are you ever wanting to be you? You know, no makeup, no monster, you being just a person. Any drive for you to want to do anything like that, or are you so into being a monster? Do you like this is my calling?
Both. So I would like to have like the Doug Jones career.
Okay, yeah.
Trajectory. It's like he's done both. He's been human in some things, but he's also been so many great character monsters and creatures and stuff like that. And that's the route I like to go. He's such a great character actor, and that's my thing. I'm a character actor. I don't want to just always do horror. I want to do other things. I would love to do comedy again. I actually like to do a really good comedy, because I feel like we haven't had a good comedy in God since like basically Tropic Thunder or The Hangover. So it's just I miss good comedies and stuff like that. So yeah, there's so much other stuff I'd like to do. I mean, like one thing it sprang to mind recently, because I'm a big fan of the anime, but I just finished the first season of the live action version of One Piece.
Oh, I've been hearing good things about it.
Oh, so good. It's so good. But because I'm like, I want to play Brook so badly on it when they ever get to, you know, that's probably going to be another few seasons till they get his character. But like, God, I would love to be a part of this. That's a character I would have so much fun playing on there. But it's like, and there's so many other opportunities I want to have out there beyond horror, stuff like that. I want to get back into doing voiceover work too. I miss doing that, especially for video games and, you know, animation.
I
want
to hear your voice. That's one thing.
Yeah.
Like, we hear it a little bit in the mean one. A little bit. Like, there's just enough
that,
there.
That one like, word I say. Oh, so
he has a voice. Oh, awesome. Like, even with art, you don't really, like, grunt a lot. Or if you do, it's very low. And the mean one, you can hear your grunting and, you know, you're feeling these things. Or you have those, like, mannerisms that kind of come out every now and then that really, you know, give it the quote-unquote Grinch feel, you know, which I really, really appreciate and love so much. So, yes, I want to hear your voice.
I recently filmed another independent film called The Dead Place, where I actually do talk in that one. So that was fun. But it still wasn't my true voice. I had more of a New York accent and stuff like that in it. So it's not truly me. But, you know, I don't like using my real voice in other things. It's like I always have to do some kind of character voice, some modification of my voice. I'm just like, yeah, because I feel like if I'm just using my real voice, I'm not the character. I'm just myself. And I'm like, no, I don't want to be me. I want to be someone else.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, I'm excited for your future and everybody else's future that's coming out, and excited for everybody to own The Mean One October 3rd.
Yes.
I'm so hyped for that. And also my showing that it hasn't really been announced, but it's announced now through you, November 30th, that we're going to be showing it in Salem, at Cinema Salem, with Stephen Lamorte and his wife, Amy, and maybe David will be there.
Maybe.
this was great. And Dustin, thank you for being here, man, to, you know, kind of be here for the ride and sit on an interview and whatnot. I've been trying to get other people, you know, involved when my co-host can't make it. So it's always a blast, man. Always a blast.
Thank you.
Of course. I appreciate you guys letting me be a fly on the wall during this.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah.
Oh, it's been great chatting with you.
Yeah, and I can't wait to own. I just got back into physical media collecting, and I can't wait to own this on Blu-ray, man. It's going to be.
That'd be great.
I'm stoked on it.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Well, you know, David, thank you so much for being here. And Dustin, thank you for joining as well. And I'm sure this is not the last time that we will be talking, David. I'm sure there'll be
definitely
something.
Not.
And I need to, when I have free time, to make it out to these conventions and meet you in the flesh. Work life and being a father, it's tough sometimes, but I'm here doing it the best I can, and I enjoy what I do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and let me put one more thing in, because not only is, you know, Mean One getting released again, they're also re-releasing Terrifier 2 in theaters in November.
That's right.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. And there's going to be a little extra something at the end of the movie. So I can't say what it is, but
I'll be there.
Hold on to your butts.
I'll be there, yeah.
I'll be there. I want to see more people faint and vomit. Yep.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, man. This is great. Thank you guys so much for being here. And everybody who's listening, make sure you keep an eye out. Get on your calendar. October 3rd, The Mean One will be out to purchase and rent, get on VOD, Blu-rays, everything. And keep your eyes out for David's further work coming out. And we'll see everybody on the next one.